Peter.
Matt.
Yes. Right. Is that better? Does that sound better?
Talk away to me there. Just tell me about your favourite football team for about a second.
Carlisle United.
Carlisle.
Yeah, Carlisle United at home today. Not much chance, I'm afraid. They've got another tough match. I saw them win last week 1-0 at Crawley, though. A rare win.
Okay. Have you got family stuff happening around you, have you?
Oh, they're in the background, but yeah, I mean, I'm going to a different room, so yeah, be all right. Yeah, so you're okay now, yeah?
Okay.
Right.
We'll go for this.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
It's another Friday afternoon. It's always Friday, isn't it? It is indeed. At Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow and Sideshow.com. Did I say Sideshow.com twice? I always get confused with that. Let's get into today's show because how do I start this one? Horticulture Week is a magazine that I used to read when I was in college. It was the magazine that the college subscribed to on our behalf as poor students financially. Well, it wasn't until, I guess, how do you say, the Sideshow began and got into the waves and into the throes of things that somewhere along those lines, a gentleman by the name of Matthew Appleby popped up again on my radar. We'll get into that and how in a few minutes. But for the moment, Matthew, you're very welcome to the Sideshow. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks a lot, Peter.
Just to clarify for those listening at home, you have a family stuff, children wailing in the background. I'm one of eight. It's very nice comfort ambiance sounds to have, Matt.
Yeah, I've got two little ones. I did a book with them last year, The Children's Garden, and they were stars of that. So they're into gardening. They come down to the allotment with me. But yeah, they're due to go out soon, so they might be quieting down in a second.
That's okay. Children and gardens are always allowed. Matt, let's get into it. First of all, for those who are not aware, what is Horticulture Week?
Horticulture Week is a trade title. It goes out across the industry to garden centres, nurseries, landscapers, arborists, the whole breadth of the industry. And its origins date back to 1841 as the Gardener's Chronicle. And more recently, 1969, a couple of trade titles joined together and became Horticulture Week. I've been there since 2003. It's published by Haymarket, and Haymarket's boss is Lord Heseltine, the former Deputy Prime Minister.
That history that you've just described is probably on par with perennial, the Gardener's Royal Benevolent Society, when one considers that they date back to pre the Irish famine. It's something that is, I gather, extremely proud to be a part of.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we had 175th anniversary last year with the oldest sort of trade title going. So, yeah, we are quite proud of that. We've got, you know, all our records held at Kew and at the RHS Lindley Library. Charles Darwin used to write his letters in the early days. So, yeah, got a proud history.
For those of you listening at home, Matthew's line is just a little bit out of sort. These things happen. But when you live in a rural part of, let's say, maybe somewhere shire, to borrow the Dylan Moran line, these things are allowed. But bear with me, it'll be worthwhile, I promise. Matt, take me back a little bit. Were you always a garden writer?
I started Horticulture Week in 2003. Before that, I worked in local paper in London. Before that, I was in New Zealand working in various media outlets. Before that, I was a primary school teacher in New Zealand. And before that, I was a primary school teacher in the UK. Before that, I did a few other bits and pieces. But no, I'm not. I trained to be a journalist rather than training to be a horticulturalist. But I've since done some RHS exams. So, and got an allotment, and so I have it as a hobby, but I wouldn't say I'm a horticultural expert, not as much as I'd like to be anyway.
How have things changed, Matt? When I grew up, the horticulture trade magazines were something that only the trade had access to because, well, essentially they were the only ones who subscribed to them. You seem to have, I guess, hit the online side of things, so the public, let me merge the two together, now have access to those articles that I guess that maybe I would only have previously been aware of, or those again in the trade would have previously been aware of. How has the trade, in brackets, also magazine, found that merge into the online world?
It's changed a lot since 2003. I mean, I used to work for websites before that, so I kind of knew the game. But when I first started the Horticulture Week, all we did was at the end of each week stick up a few of the top stories on the site, and that was it. There was no interaction. It was just like, you know, these are the stories, you can look at them if you want, and they're exactly the same as in the magazine. Now, you know, I'll put up stories all the time. There's interaction. There's, you know, there's a lot more going on the website. You know, we put out bulletins every day. We put out weekly bulletins as well, sector bulletins. Website's where it's at now. It's more or less about print publications because, you know, people want to look on their mobile. You know, it's just a completely different way of accessing information. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, website is basically where it's at now. And I think, you know, eventually we'll get into video, you know, you know, stuff that, like what you do. Maybe.
I'll welcome the competition. Indeed, you do write, obviously, for Horticulture Week. You do other things, I guess, outside of that, or is that the mainstay, Matt?
Oh, that's the mainstay, but I do the odd bit for a few people, you know, write the odd piece for a few papers and magazines, if they ask me. You know, I'm always sort of keen to do that. And I'll represent the magazine on whoever asked me to. So last week I was, week before last, I was at Glee Trade Show, and that was on breakfast time on the BBC, talking about, you know, new garden products. And week before that I was on Radio 4 talking about houseplants and succulents on the You and Your show. And I write the odd piece of Telegraph, the odd piece of, you know, one or two other people, and try and do some longer stuff, like by writing the odd book. So I've done one on allotments, I've done one on children's gardening, and I've got one coming up out next year, published by Pen and Sword, when they're in print, White Owl. And I think it's going to be called something like Super Organic Gardening, but I want it to be about vegan gardening, Peter. Vegan gardening.
Back up a little bit just for a second, because there's a video that I was sent a couple of weeks ago. It is very tongue in jest, so if you're vegan, I apologize for this. But essentially it was a non-vegan telling a vegan that you eat the things that I want to feed to the things that I want to eat, if that makes any sense to you. Okay, so that's Peter's sense of humor, or I wit entirely to one side. How do you write, or what? I've never heard of a book that is written about what you're essentially wanted to title it.
Well, yeah, it's something I've been wanting to write for quite a long time, but I've tried it with quite a few publishers and they were just like, no, this didn't exist, even like really green environmental publishers. But I've sort of pushed away at that and, you know, I've got a publisher to agree to do it. And, you know, veganism is a massive deal in food, you know, and millions of books have been sold around that recently. People like Ella Woodward and their Helmsley Sisters and Clean Eating, that's been a massive trend. So I thought, you know, in gardening, if you're going organic, you know, if you want to be super organic, you would not use blood, fish, bone or manure, because the possibility of contaminants, and also because you wouldn't want to use byproducts of the animal industry. And I think there's a big audience out there for this, potentially, if they, you know, if I can sort of access them and if I can get them to understand what I'm writing about. Because as you say, like most people I say this to, they go, isn't all gardening about veganism because it's vegetables? I'm like, well, kind of, but maybe not. So I've got a bit of an education thing to get out there, but I think, you know, it might be fun.
Essentially, I've got a guy who's written a book about children's gardening, correct me if I'm wrong here, Matt, one on allotment tiering, and the next one is on veganism. Normally, if I take somebody like Andrew Wilson, it's a garden design book, it's a variant of a garden design book, and it's a garden design book. None of them are exactly the same, but essentially they have a common concurrent theme. Yours is not that. And I ask this with the greatest of respect, but do you find it difficult to sit still as I would do? Does your brain tend to have peaks almost like a heart monitor when it's bipping away and each one of those peaks is a different subject? How does the brain inside your head work on this? Because it doesn't even tie in with anything that you tend to write about in Horticulture Week, if you don't mind me saying.
No, it's very different from what I'd write about in Horticulture Week, where I'd write about the peat industry, or I'd write about, the chemical industry. But, I want to write something different, and I want to come from a different point of view. I mean, my book about allotments wasn't about how to do this stuff on your allotment week by week. It was about stuff to do on your allotments when you're bored of your allotment, because there was a lot of people giving up after the grow your own boom kind of peaked and fizzled. So I'm trying to look for different angles, because, there's millions of gardening books come out all the time. And a lot of them are very, very similar. And, there's not a lot new to say, and I'm not as much of an expert on horticulture as, so many people who do write these books. So I've got to find somewhere, something different. And I want to entertain myself. I want to write something which is going to keep me, happy. So I want to write something which is different, which is very difficult in publishing, because they want you to write something which is similar to something that's already been a hit. I'm glad that someone has agreed to do this vegan gardening thing. Vegan's massive now. Guinness is vegan now, Peter.
Is it?
It is.
Wow. Jeepers. I must be a super vegan if that's the case. But while I have you, Matt, the allotment books, and I will agree with you, there are a lot of books that would come into the Sideshow office or end up on my desk that I do open them and say it is a bit sometimes. I say sometimes, and I apologize for those of you out there who do a very good, sterling job of writing books that I absolutely love, but some of them can be a little bit same old, same old. How did the allotment one that you wrote differ? What is the title of it, as by the way?
Well, they called it the allotment planner. I wanted to call it things to do on your allotment when you're bored of your allotment, but they wouldn't have that. And it was basically, weekly projects to do on your allotment, but stuff that wasn't gardening. And it went well. We got a big copy numbers shifted, which is what it's all about, apparently. The publisher were happy enough to do another one about kids gardening, which was a bit more straight down the line about kids gardening. But it was because I had two little kids, so I wanted to do it because that was what I was doing at the time. But the allotment thing, I was really happy about how it all turned out. And I was with Francis Lincoln, who was a good publisher, and they stuck me with me for the second one. And now this vegan one's come along, and basically it's about, standard stuff, because you've got to make your own compost. If you're going to be super organic or vegan, you're not going to use horse manure, you're not going to use peat, so you've got to make your own compost. You've got to think about what fertilizer you're going to use. So I think seaweeds are going to be a big thing next year. For instance, Seasol, an Australian seaweed fertilizer, has been distributed by Mr. Folligos next year. Maxi Crop is being distributed by SBM, it used to be Bayer. And there's an Irish seaweed company, Fastgrow, who I guess and they're getting distributed in the UK next year. So I think seaweed's a big trend for next year as a fertilizer. I could bang on about a load of other trends for next year, which might not fit in quite so much with this book, but one thing. And in the book I'm going to say how you can grow your own seaweed. Not that many people are going to bother doing that, but you can if you want.
To take the children's one then, Matt, the amount of press releases that I would see, how do I say this, or to give you a slightly different example, when my daughter was 2 years of age, 6 months old, 3-4 years of age, I used to read her bedtime stories and record them for no apparent reason. If I got a record deal based on those recordings that were already done, is that on par with maybe what you did with the children's gardening book?
Oh, maybe, yeah. I mean, my little one's on the front of it, so it's quite a nice family memento. But, I was just doing this stuff with them day to day anyway. I've got pictures of my eldest one down the allotment, asleep in a kind of pram, at the age of a few months. So, I did things with them in gardens, and it reminded, I just did what the stuff I did when I was a kid, because, I was brought up in the 70s, and my parents had a garden where they grew a load of fruit and veg, and they were kind of good life type people without really realizing it. So, and they gave me a bit of a corner of a plot to grow some stuff on, and, they let me mow the lawn and, prune the plum tree and stuff, and so I just let my kids do that, and build fires and build water walls and sound walls and play football and have ponds and all that type of stuff. So I just kind of it was just an obvious thing for me to write, and an enjoyable thing too.
Do you get those press releases, Martin? Have you had those press releases about children and gardening?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think it's fair enough. I mean, everybody wants kids to go in the garden, and it's always a good thing. There's a school gardening club at the school my kids go to, and my little one does that, and he quite enjoys it. And they come down along with me all the time, and it's always a good thing to get them outside. You don't want them inside, do you? Causing havoc around the house, smashing stuff up.
And the one going forward, Matt, have you a release date on it?
Hopefully October next year. I've got to get it finished by Christmas if I'm going to do that. So I've got to get on with it, really. So because I only got it agreed to in the last week or two. So I gave myself a very short deadline. So I really need to do some serious writing. I'm going up to Hume Garden Centre in Manchester the week after next, because that's a vegan garden centre. It's been featured on Gardeners World, so that's going to give me some good background. And I'm going to visit a sort of vegan organic farm and go to a vegan fair and that. I mean, it's not something which I've ever done much on. I became a vegetarian, Peter, in 1985. The guy who made me become a vegetarian back then was Morrissey and Meat is Murder and The Smiths. That came out in 1985. And I think that's the same with a lot of people. And then in about late 90s, I went out with a girl who was a vegan. So, you end up becoming a vegan. I'm not the strictest vegan, not at all. But it's always been a thing I've kind of done. And just thought, this is something which is going to interest me and hopefully interest other people.
Can I ask you, Matt, is the girl who you met who was a vegan, who I got her, you fell in love with, is she the lady that you are with today?
No. She was around for a few years, but no longer. Yeah, and not anymore now. Not at all. No.
Okay, we'll skip past that just in case the kids are listening to this.
No, that's gone out. You can probably tell.
Are the children vegan, Matt?
No, they're not. They set off as vegetarians, and my wife was vegetarian, but then they got the choice of eating meat, and one of them only eats meat now. Won't eat anything else.
Really?
He just eats sausages all the time, yeah.
Oh, God almighty. Right, let's skew sideways entirely, Matt. When you're not writing for Horticulture Week, when you're not down the allotment, what's going on?
Well, I could tell you about a few stories I've written recently, which have been quite fun to write. I wrote one last week about Monty Don, and he said in his new book, use a scythe and not a lawnmower, which kind of made my ears prick up. I thought that's quite an interesting thing to say, considering like 800,000 lawnmowers are sold a year. And he's on Gardener's World. So I asked a few people who were interested, and almost all of them said, that's crazy. He's going to use a scythe and not a lawnmower. But apparently 1,500 scythes are sold a year now, and it is coming back in a bit as people want to be kind of get back to sort of pre-industrial revolution kind of era. So I did a story on that, which I think is an interesting talking point. I'm always kind of looking for sort of entertaining stories like that to write about. Xylella is a big thing at the moment for me to write about. We've just put a new Xylella bit on our website in Hort Week. I've written 90 Xylella stories in the last 3 years, which is a bit crazy.
90?
I know. So these are plants like olives, rosemary, lavender, Xylella, which is obviously a big bad plant disease, got 300 hosts. It's in France, in Italy massively, and it's in Spain, but it's not reached the UK yet. But I was at the Horticulture Trade Association conference last week, and the guy from the Food and Environmental Research Agency, he said that it's going to get into the UK pretty soon, probably. Xylella is a thing which I'm relentlessly writing about.
When was I there? I was at RHS Wisley, curated, I should add, by former guest of the show, Matthew Potash. They had the alternate to box hedging, books of Sempervirens trial area on the go. Now, I guess I'm starting to see that it's starting to fade out of garden designs, where essentially it was a little bit of a staple. Is it on par with that, maybe, or have I got that a little bit askew?
No, probably. I mean, the box issue has just reached, the box hedge out the front of my house. And people say to me, crikey, our box hedges are looking terrible. And I was like, well, it's not an awful lot you can do about it now. So just, you know, you're going to plant something else, aren't you? Like, you know, when speaking to the growers, they say, we're not selling much box anymore. It's a bit like horse chestnuts. No one really sells any horse chestnuts anymore because the damage to them is too great. You know, you're not going to plant them anymore until, well, probably not for a long time. So, yeah, so you're looking for, you know, Ilex trinata or whatever, you know, the alternatives. And possibly with I mean, I was talking to some of the Chelsea designers and they said, you know, no one uses olives anymore. They're a bit passe. And no one had used rosemary and lavender and sort of dismissing all these plants. But, you know, I don't know, quite so much. But, yeah, you'll see things other than that next year, definitely.
What other trends are on the go, Matt? And you touched on it there briefly, but in times of frugality or essentially in economic downturns, historically, we have turned to allotment tiering. Have you found that there has been an ebb and a flow where as sales of the more flowering type plants as versus vegetables?
Oh, I mean, I think, you know, and what the gardening industry will always tell you is that gardening's pretty recession proof and, you know, it carries on regardless as people looking for a bit of, you know, fairly cheap pleasure and, you know, staycations type of stuff. And, you know, the industry over here has had a pretty good year this year. You know, it's a few percent up. You know, the big grow-your-own boom happened with the credit crunch, you know, 2011. It died off, but it's still around quite a bit, you know. And I see, you know, the veg sales have gone up a bit this year, and veg seeds. I mean, crikey, what are we looking at next year? I mean, all the staples would be just the same in terms of veg sales. And but I think, well, one trend next year, I think, is chili for flavour. It's Flora Select Plant of the Year. But rather than growing chili for heat, which people always go on about, and there was a RHS sort of shortlisted Plant of the Year, which was the hottest chili ever last year, people are going to not talk about chilies and heat, which they always do. They're going to talk about growing chilies for flavour. In terms of plants, where they're talking about zinnia, but I mean, house plants is a big thing from this year. That's gone absolutely crazy. You know, all these garden centres have tripled, quadrupled sales because basically people have got smaller gardens, more flats, a lot of building going on. But that's the young people are getting into house plants. I mean, I don't think that's a big secret, and whether that continues or not is a bit of a question, but people reckon it's, you know, here to stay for a couple more years yet.
What about tree sales, Matt? And I guess trees in landscaping. In my own business, I found that, how would you say it, by the time the bottom of the curve hit, what Ron Finley would describe as the Great Depression, I found that if the garden was to be done, it was nearly going to seed as versus roll out turf as things started to evolve up to 2013, 14, 15. Statistically, on my own part, I think 2016, latter end of, was probably the greatest year for sales of trees that Donegan Landscaping has had since maybe 2006, 2007.
Obviously, with gardens getting smaller, it's pretty hard to put trees in, and garden centres sell not many big trees anymore. But the compact fruit tree is going to be a big trend next year. You know, this mulberry one at Chelsea, best new plant, and there's quite a lot of others that have come out. So I think a compact fruit tree fulfills people's need for a tree, and it gives them, you know, some produce as well. But yeah, the big trees is a difficult one. I mean, there's so many tree scares around as well. You know, it's the big trees that these diseases are going to come in on. I mean, ash dieback is the prime example. You know, in 2012, a guy rang me up and said, I've got ash dieback, we've imported it. Fair, I don't want anyone to know, but we want people to know, so will you report it if you don't mention our name? So I said, yeah. So I did it. The papers ran it. 6 months later, the government press released it, and everyone went nuts. Since then, the government has completely changed their biosecurity because they know that because of globalization and, you know, increasing imports, that biosecurity is like the number one issue. And they haven't dealt with it in the past very well. But now they deal with it a lot better. But these diseases are coming in more and more. You know, there's like 100 on this sort of risk register. And it, you know, because trees are big, they're going to have more things on them than a small plant. Much harder to check. Something like Chelsea, right? Or, you know, most of the trees and a lot of the plants are imported. Didn't set a particularly good example. With Brexit and with biosecurity, I think that's going to be, it's really going to hit the fan on that next year, and people are going to sit up and think, crikey, protect the borders.
Protect the borders as regards plants.
Yeah, I think DEFRA are going to try and ban stuff coming in.
Okay, for those who aren't aware, Matt, DEFRA I would be aware of, but can you explain to those listening who aren't too who they are?
That's the Ministry of Farming in the UK, yeah.
Don't get me wrong, the Sideshow doesn't do politics in any way whatsoever, so let's...
Really?
Well, no, we avoid it at all costs. If you want to, just look, there are question times that are nothing related to gardening. If people want to go watch them, they're more than welcome to do so. However, in this case, there is a little bit of a tie over, I guess, between one and the other. In this minute case, I'm trying to think of a plant equivalent and I can't off the top of my head, but in the BSE crisis, the beef scare,
yeah.
I know there was an entire clampdown on transportation of animals from one to the other, of even crossing land from one place to the other, of imports, of exports, of absolutely just about everything. There was an entire lockdown. Is that essentially what you're referring to, but in a plant case?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard xylella described as, you know, horticulture's foot and mouth. I think, you know, horticulture is political. I'm always trying to bring politics into it. You know, I think gardening's political if you want it to be.
Well, I'd call politics slightly differently to maybe a Theresa May or a Tony Blair to differentiate between the two. I sometimes say that it's a little bit like models on a catwalk, but that's a different type of politics. I've got four sisters and three brothers, and there's politics in there that I don't get involved in, but it's nothing to do with people who are paid to sit in or stand in number 10 Downing Street to differentiate.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I think with the political situation in the UK at the moment and Brexit, there's a lot of lobbying going on from the horticultural industry within Parliament. So, you know, those political things have risen up the agenda, particularly in terms of import substitution and plant health. It's all a bit dry, but, you know, it's the sort of stuff that I kind of write about quite often. Try and write about more entertaining stuff as well, like... who's going to be at Chelsea in 2018? That's always a good thing to write about.
Because it's a little bit happier than talking about Brexit, no disrespect.
Yeah. Well, I know you had McGar on the other day, didn't you?
I did, and to be honest with you, you were the catalyst for that show coming out about a week earlier, because you were the one who announced that they were going to Chelsea.
Yeah, well, I don't know, the Horticultural Trade Association, you know, the trade body of horticulture in the UK, they're keen to do a garden on the main avenue, and Warnes McGar, they did a good garden at Tatton, and you know, I've heard that the HJ had got in touch with them and they wanted to get these up and comers to come, you know, design it and build it at Chelsea, and you know, they had the final selection meeting last week, so I don't know if everyone's definitely in, but I would say, you know, the HJ have put this design in. Be great to see it there, you know, because it's going to promote the whole industry, and a lot of players in the industry will give plants for free and, you know, services for free, and it'll be a good showcase. So looking forward to seeing that one.
To be honest with you, Matt, what I admired about Warnes McGar, Michael, who I did speak to, that's the interview that's being referred to at this moment in time. If you're in iTunes or your podcast provider, just press that middle button on your phone when this is finished. Take a listen to it, because it is an absolute corker is the only way to describe it. But their garden stood out for all of the right reasons. The fact that they jumped from doing a Tatton flower show to a Chelsea is something that I don't believe I've heard of in an extremely long time.
I mean, I'm also told that Sarah Price is going to be back, who was the Olympic designer. And I'm pretty sure she's going to be with the show sponsor, M&G. I could be wrong, but hopefully I'm right. And if that's the case, then I reckon she'll win Best in Show. So stick your money on her now.
Your top five predictions or trends for 2018 to watch out for?
Compact fruit trees, chili for flavour, seaweed, vegan gardening, and all the things I've been bagging on about. Sarah Price. There you are. That's five.
That's five.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. And we're going to leave it there just for 1 minute in the, well, we're going to leave it there entirely. In fact, my guest has been Matthew Appleby of Hort Week. They are hortweek.com. You'll find Matt on Twitter as Matt Apple, MattApple1. If you need anything at all, it is at Sudshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesudshow and sudshow.com. Matt, thanks very much. That's been absolutely brilliant.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for that. No, thanks for it. Thanks for having me on. It's been brilliant.
Don't forget, the Sideshow Christmas party takes place Saturday, the 9th of December. I'll see you there. Five will make you get down now. Get on down.